Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to share a free resource that could help you or someone you know wrestle with one of life's biggest questions. Does it make sense to believe in God? This compelling chapter from Why You Can Believe takes on today's top scientific and philosophical objections and reveals three clear reasons why belief in God is entirely rational. Whether you're exploring faith or equipping someone else, it's a must read. And it can be yours today for free. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast. Before we dive into today's episode, I wanted to share a free resource that could help you or someone you know wrestle with one of life's biggest questions. Does it make sense to believe in God? This compelling chapter from Why You Can Believe takes on today's top scientific and philosophical objections and reveals three clear reasons why belief in God is entirely rational. Whether you're exploring faith or equipping someone else, it's a must read. And it can be yours today for free. Download your free copy now at premierinsight.org/resources. Again, that's premierinsight.org/resources. And now it's time for today's podcast.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Hello, it's Justin Brierley. Welcome along to a podcast special for Unbelievable. Not the usual radio show today. That's because Premier Christian Radio here in the UK has all this week and weekend given space over to its regular Together Now fundraising appeal. We are a listener-supported station and your giving does make a huge difference. So if you do want to get involved, then simply visit premier.org.uk/together now. Well, Unbelievable brings Christians and non-Christians together for debate every week, and you can find past episodes, loads of extra stuff at the website of the show, premierchristianradio.com/unbelievable. And just this week, the show turned 10 years old. Yes, we first broadcast on Saturday, the 26th of November, 2005. I think I only had one child back then rather than four, and I'm pretty sure I weighed a bit less as well. Lots has happened in 10 years, and we are going to be celebrating it on next week's programme, which will be a look back at those 10 years and your chance to ask me any question. So if you've got a question about the show, about any of the things we've done, the guests and so on, simply send it in to unbelievable@premier.org.uk or send it in via the Facebook page or Twitter, and I'll try to answer as many as I can next week. So today, in place of the usual show, I'm putting up the audio of a recent debate that took place in Belfast, Northern Ireland. It features someone who's been on the show a number of times over the last 10 years, David Robertson, who's now the moderator of the Free Church in Scotland. He debated Michael Nugent of Atheist Ireland. Now, I should warn you that I'm putting up the full audio here, including the audience Q&A, which times in at about 2 hours. So if you're ready to commit to that, here we go. Around 400 people filled Stormont Hotel's ballroom to hear Michael Nugent and David Robertson debate the question, is Christianity holding Northern Ireland back? The event was organised by local churches. 150 tickets were distributed by atheist and humanist groups, 150 by the local churches, and the remaining 150 were available online on a first-come, first-served basis. My thanks to the organisers for allowing me to use the audio on this podcast, and we begin with an introduction by the moderator for the evening, BBC Northern Ireland presenter William Crawley.
Welcome, everybody. Do come on in. Don't worry. Come and join us if you're arriving at this point. Welcome to an evening of what we hope will be high-octane intellectual debate. Yes, you weren't expecting that, were you, of a Thursday evening in Belfast? But yes, and especially so close to Stormont. You know, how unusual is that? But we'll make an effort. And over the last 15 years or so, there has been a development of debates like this, big public debates all around the world, where people have been exploring the place of religion within society, the idea, the philosophical idea of God, the idea of God itself, and belief in God and the rationality of belief in God, and whether religion is a positive feature of our world and of our society, or whether our world and our society would be a better place without it. So if you look back to the rise of the new atheism movement You know, it's 15 years ago now, isn't it? With Richard Dawkins, people like the biologist Richard Dawkins, or scientists like Sam Harris, or philosophers like Daniel Dennett and A.C. Grayling, and many, many others, they have promoted a conversation around the world about those issues. And what's also interesting is that that seems to have also triggered a kind of rejuvenation of Christian apologetics, of attempts to respond to some of those claims and challenges and to make a rational case for Christianity or for other faith traditions in the world. And so we join that conversation tonight with two very special guests. Now, the first thing you need to know about our guests is that they're not from here. And that is an advantage. Because we know in this society that we need to resource ourselves intellectually with as many people from somewhere else as we can possibly. You all agree with that, yeah? So although our debate tonight asks whether Christianity is holding Northern Ireland back, we want you to engage with the Northern Ireland part of that question just as much as we've asked our guests to engage with it tonight. The format is very simple. I'm going to ask our guests to take 10 minutes each without interruption and to make their case, the case for and against Christianity within this society. And then we're going to invite them to engage in interrogation, to put questions and challenges to each other, 10 minutes each way. And then it's your turn. And I've allowed 30 to 40 minutes for this, so I hope you're good. I'm expecting you to be really good. Tonight we'll have microphones moving around the room. You can ask a question of either or both of our speakers. You can make a brief contribution yourself to the debate. Join the debate. And then we'll have final summing up remarks from our speakers. That's the format. That's the journey we're on tonight. Are you ready for this? Okay. Our first speaker tonight will be Michael Nugent, who is the chair of Atheist Ireland. Michael's a professional writer. He makes his living as a writer and broadcaster. He's written a number of books, including the now famous Dear John books. We regularly have Michael on programmes across the BBC, and he's on RTE and Channel 4 and everywhere else. He's engaging in these debates across Ireland and internationally. Incidentally, he's also co-written Aikino, the comedy musical. Did you ever see Aikino? It made €10 million in its first 2 years. So Michael's paying for the drinks tonight for everybody in the room back at the bar. So Michael will be making the case against Christianity as a positive force in our society tonight. And he knows Northern Ireland very well over the years throughout the Troubles. He's been involved in debates about paramilitarism and the peace process here. David Robertson joins us not long off the plane from Scotland and raring to go, aren't you, David? Moderator of the Free Church of Scotland. That's not the Free Presbyterian Church. It's the Free Church. He's a wee free. The Free Church of Scotland. That's his email address, incidentally. He's a minister, obviously, in the Free Church of Scotland, but he's also the director of SOLAS, the Centre for Public Theology, which is one of those movements that has been triggered by these big debates internationally around apologetics. SOLAS, as you'll know, is both the Irish and the Scots Gaelic word for light. And like Michael, David's the author of a number of books, some of which are at the back, and he's offered to sell you some tonight and to sign them. Books like The Dawkins Letters, where he responds to the claims of Richard Dawkins, and also Engaging with Atheists, a kind of guide to apologetic conversations with atheists. So we're grateful to both David and Michael for journeying here tonight. I'm going to get out of the way now, and we're going to get things going. Please join me in welcoming our first speaker, making the case against the positive place of Christianity in our society, Michael Nugent.
Okay. Thank you. What I was starting to say is that I hope that we can combine tonight a combination of robust debate about our disagreements, about ideas and beliefs, with respect for each other as individuals. I think that's the balance that we have to reach in these type of discussions. I think that it's clear that Christianity has held Northern Ireland back, because religion holds society back generally. Particularly, but not exclusively, when it is intertangled with politics. Politics should be about governing this world, and politicians have enough to do in terms of governing this world without worrying about whatever may or may not exist in supernatural worlds. People have the right to believe whatever they want to believe. Whether you're religious or not religious, you have the right to believe whatever you want to believe. You have the right to manifest your religious or non-religious beliefs, as long as you're not infringing on the human rights of others. And the only way for everybody's rights to be respected equally is for the state to remain neutral. Once the state takes sides, either in terms of promoting religion or promoting atheism, then you don't have a fair and equal society. And you don't have the human rights of freedom of conscience, religion or belief, equality before the law, freedom from discrimination, very fundamental beliefs that are infringed on when religion influences the state and the running of the country. We've had effectively on the island of Ireland since partition two sectarian states. We've had a sectarian Protestant state in Northern Ireland and a sectarian Catholic state in the Republic of Ireland. And while the Catholic minority in Northern Ireland was large enough to ensure that Northern Ireland would remain a contested religious political space, the Protestant minority in the Republic of Ireland was so small that most of them ended up either emigrating or keeping their heads down. I particularly experienced that because my late wife was an Anglo-Irish Protestant from Limerick. When she was going to school as a child in Limerick, the Catholic children used to spit on her and her fellow students going to the local Protestant school. So we have had a history in Ireland of sectarianism on both sides of the border. We've had in my lifetime another warped influence of that, which is the interplay of religious beliefs about sexuality government and politics. In the 1970s, the IRA at one stage used to use condoms as part of the timing mechanisms of their bombs, and some IRA members were opposed to that on moral grounds. In the Republic of Ireland, we had the Charles Haughey bringing in a law that eventually made condoms legal in Ireland, but in order to buy a condom, you had to have a doctor's prescription saying that you were a married couple and that you needed the condoms for bona fide family planning purposes. So that's the type of country that I lived in, on both sides of the border here in Ireland, or both countries on the island. 40 years later, we still have religious discrimination on both sides of the border against atheists and minority faith members. We have religious oaths for public office. We have religious control of schools and of state-funded schools, indeed. We have sectarianism effectively institutionalised in the Good Friday Agreement, or the Belfast Agreement. I think that that's a necessary halfway step, but we have to reach a stage where Northern Ireland has normal politics in the same way as other countries in the democratic world. We have lobbyists like the Iona Institute in the Republic and the Caleb Foundation up here, whose Wallace Thompson says that ideally all legislation should reflect biblical morality. I'm going to talk in a few minutes about biblical morality, and the idea that all legislation should reflect that is abhorrent to democracy. Thankfully, I don't know if you're aware of a programme that was on just a couple of weeks ago, a joint RTE-BBC programme that had an opinion poll about opinions towards both a United Ireland and social issues. And thankfully, that reflected on both sides of the border that the population is moving on, that the prejudice against gay people, the prejudice against women who need abortions, that prejudice among the population is lessening. But unfortunately, we still have laws that were there at a time, that were put in place at a time where there was more overt religious control, and the politicians will have to eventually catch up to that. Now, I'm going to suggest that there are two reasons why religion holds back society. And the first is that religion corrupts our sense of reality. It encourages us to believe implausible claims on faith. And what I mean by faith, different people have different definitions, what I mean by faith is believing things either because you want to believe them or because you're afraid not to believe them, but believing them disproportionately to the best available evidence. But before I get into that, I've got some good news for everybody here today. I was talking to Martin McGuinness and Peter Robinson today, and they said that if you vote with me today, they're going to get married. Now, you realise that's an absurd claim. It's absolutely ridiculous. But if I had told you instead that I was talking today to the creator of the universe, and that he had told me that he would give you all an eternity in paradise if you did what I say, some of you might believe me. Certainly around the world, enough people would believe me to make it worth my while to set up an organisation on that basis if I decided to, and that is because religion corrupts our sense of reality. Because normally when I say something to you, or when anybody says something to you, like I just said about Peter Robinson and Martin McGuinness, what you do is you measure it against the evidence. And the more implausible the claim is, the higher the bar you set of the amount of evidence that you need to believe it. But with religion, we do the exact opposite. The more implausible the claim becomes, the less evidence you demand in order to believe it. To the extent that religion encourages us to believe not only implausible claims, but literally untestable claims. Claims whose testability is hidden in an imaginary afterlife. And then religion insists that not only should we believe this, but other people should lead their lives on the basis of what we believe. That people should lead their lives on the basis of what other people think that the creator of the universe is telling them to impose on them. Now compare that with secular faiths, because faith can be a problem in the secular world as well. People can have faith in communism. People can have faith in the unregulated free market. People have faith in people believe disproportionately to the evidence in all sorts of projects. But the difference between secular faiths and dogmas and religious faith and dogmas is that eventually with secular faith, it bumps into reality. People notice that the unregulated free market isn't working. People notice that communism isn't working. And people are forced to change their views because of the evidence of reality. But religious faith hides its testability in this imaginary afterlife, and so it continues in a way that it shouldn't. Religion also makes some testable claims about the real world, about the world that we live in. It tells us that miracles happen. We know that they don't. It tells us that Jesus rose from the dead. We know that people don't rise from the dead. It tells us that Muhammad flew on a winged horse, and we know that there aren't winged horses. It tells us that some people are possessed by evil demons when we know that it's mental illnesses. It tells us that humans and only humans have immortal souls when we know that we are evolved animals just like other animals. Nothing special. The same as 99% of the species that have ever been on the earth have died out. That's probably going to be our fate as well. We've got to get a sense of proportion in terms of our place in the overall scheme of things. Religion tells us that prayer works. And we know from the only empirical research that exists that not only does prayer not work, but it can actually be harmful. And religion tells us that religion is good for society. And as I'll outline in a few minutes, there is evidence to show that secular societies have far better social outcomes than religious societies. The second way that religion corrupts our society is it corrupts our sense of morality. Morality is a natural function of our brains. As social animals, we have evolved because cooperation is as important as competition to survival. Social animals, including but not limited to humans, have evolved senses of compassion and empathy and cooperation and reciprocity and fairness and justice. And that enables us to act in a manner that is beneficial to everybody. Now, it's often hard to figure out what the right thing to do is. What's the most moral thing to do? So many things to weigh up, so many possible interactions. So who knows whether you're making the right moral decision? But if you're basing it on compassion and empathy and reciprocity and cooperation and fairness and justice, you're at least moving in the right direction. What religion does is it adds into that already difficult equation a corrupting factor that says you've got to do this even though it's not the most compassionate thing, because somebody wrote it in a book 2,000 years ago. How are we going on time?
You're finished.
I'm finished, okay. Okay, so I'll just summarise that. Religion corrupts our sense of reality. Religion corrupts our sense of morality. And hopefully, during the rest of the discussion, I'll be able to give a little bit more evidence about that. Thank you very much.
Brilliant, thank you. Michael Nugent. Thank you, Michael. And making the case for the positive presence of Christianity in our society, please welcome David Robertson.
Well, I'm standing here with a horrible image for you. I'm feeling a wee bit naked because I can't find my phone. And I don't know what I'm going to do with everything. I'm kind of addicted to my iPhone. But anyway, we shall continue. I'm also a wee bit puzzled because I don't recognize at all Michael's definition of religion. So it's going to be interesting discussing something. I always think it's good to discuss what your opponent actually believes and not what you wish they believe in. I want to suggest to you that if you remove religion, and it's difficult to say religion because there are all different kinds of religion, as people know. I think it is an absurdity to say that all religions are equal. That is not true. I don't believe that my faith is equal, for example, to a religion which would want to sacrifice children. I don't think my faith is equivalent to ISIS, although I was very grateful to hear Michael talk about secular faith, and I don't think my faith is equivalent to secular faith either. But I think if we remove Christianity from Northern Ireland, as it's being removed from Scotland, I think we're going to find that there are some consequences that will occur. The first is because of the church-state divide, and here I agree with the importance that Michael has now. I think it's wrong to have a theocracy. I don't think I'm moderator of the Free Church General Assembly, and we should not be running Scotland. We can hardly run the church. So I think it would be a big mistake to put us in charge of Scotland. Mind you, we might be able to do better than the politicians who are already there, but I don't want it. No, thank you. But if you see, in the good old days, if you want to put it that way, there was a recognition of a separation between church and state, or at least an interaction in which church and state were different. And it was Christianity that brought that. Paganism didn't recognize it. Roman law didn't recognize it. Greek law didn't recognize it. But Christianity most certainly did recognize it, even at times when people sought to use Christianity for political power, as still happens, which is still wrong. But now what's happening is this. Removing Christianity out of society, particularly a society like Northern Ireland or a society like Scotland, means this. That the state comes in and plays God. The state tells us how we should educate our children. The state tells us what we should believe. And instead of a theocracy, you have got a state, basically, for me, a form of fascism. A corporate control of the individual. And I think that you need Christianity to prevent the state being the all-powerful authority. Second reason I want to be for Christianity is because of equality. Now, our secularist friends or atheist friends try to imply that equality is an empirically observable, natural thing that human beings have, a basic human right that's recognized throughout the world. As President Obama said about the Paris thing, basic human values that everyone recognizes. No, they don't. They don't. And it's not basic. Professor John Haldane of St. Andrews University gave a lecture recently in which he pointed out that science absolutely empirically demonstrates that people are not equal. We are not all the same height, the same health, the same intelligence. We are most certainly not equal. Social Darwinianism teaches that we are not evil. We evolve. We're not evil, doesn't it? It teaches that we are not equal because we evolve according to the strong overcoming the weak. Christianity, on the other hand, teaches a genuine and real equality because it says that all, no matter who they are, whether you're the child in the womb, whether you're handicapped, whether you're an elderly person dying, black, white, whatever sexuality you are, all are made in the image of God. It is the ultimate equality. Secondly, if you lose Christianity, you're going to lose tolerance. By the way, let me just say about equality. Michael spoke about equality before the law. Yes, but that presupposes the question, who makes the law? What laws should we have? Tolerance. I think that there is an enormous problem there. I think that a society in which the state is the only ultimate authority will become an increasingly intolerant society. And what I've noticed in my own country is the increasing intolerance occurring within society for people who hold to different points of view. Fourthly, social action and justice. I would want to argue that Christianity plays a great role in that. I've some figures that I dug up about Northern Ireland, that in total, there are 98 social projects provided by faith groups, 105,147 total volunteers per hour. On average per year, each church faith group is delivering 10 social action projects and offering 10,515 volunteer hours. There are 16 Trussell Trust food banks in partnership with local churches, as well as many other independent ones. 68% of youth groups registered with local education and library boards in Northern Ireland are faith or church-based, along with 75% of volunteers. Remove them. That's what the proposition says. Get rid of religion. And people will do this anyway. I don't think so. Tell me where the atheist food banks are. Atheists don't set up schools. They just take over Christian schools, cuckoo-like, and then impose their atheist values upon the rest of us who don't necessarily want them. And then I think my final reason would be just simply to say this. I don't want Christianity removed from society because Christianity changes people. I accept, of course, there are religious nutcases. I'm not one of them, despite what some of my friends might say. Tolstoy once argued, "Everyone thinks of changing society, no one thinks of changing themselves." I think of The Who, who sarcastically sang about, after a revolution, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. We don't need to change systems, we need to change people. Solzhenitsyn said that the line between good and evil runs through every human heart. George Bush was entirely wrong when he said there's the good guys and the bad guys. We're all the good guys and we're all the bad guys. And I'm sorry, but the people who attacked people in France were entirely wrong, but they were also human beings. And the evil that is in them is also, at least in seed form, in each one of us. And until we recognize that, we will not have justice and change in our society. Dostoevsky, you can see I like the Russians, argued that in The Brothers Karamazov, that without belief in God, everything is permissible. And I think that logically is a true statement. It is, for me, the most frightening thing that fundamentalist atheists presuppose that their views are the natural ones that all sane and intelligent human beings will have. I don't want to live in a society like that. I want to live in a society where people are free to question. I want to live in a society where I am free to bring up my children in the Christian faith and not to patronizingly be told you believe whatever you want as long as you don't put it into action. That's one of the most totalitarian and Orwellian ways of behaving. If you remove religion from modern society, from contemporary society, let me tell you this, I wouldn't want to live in the hell that would exist with the eradication of religion. There are people throughout the 20th century who've tried to remove religion. Now, there's a qualifier to all of this before I run out of my time. And it's simply this. I am not saying that all religion is good. Nor am I saying that all Christians are good. But what I'm saying is this, that in a pluralistic, tolerant society, it is absolutely illogical to claim to be for tolerance and at the same time to ask for the eradication or removal of religion from society. I'll rest my case there just now. Thank you.
Brilliant. Thank you, David. Thank you to Michael. Now we move to our interrogation section. I'm going to invite Michael to drive the next 10 minutes, and then we'll reverse it by interrogating David on the claims he's just made.
Okay, thanks. Well, first, David, nobody suggested, certainly I didn't suggest, eradicating Christianity. In fact, I started by saying that everybody has the right to believe whatever they want to believe. I fully respect and support the right of religious people to believe whatever they want to believe and to practice their religion as long as it doesn't infringe on the human rights of others. Saying that you believe that something holds society back is not the same thing as saying that you believe people don't have the right to practice it. In terms of practicing it, in terms of the beliefs, can I just clarify first in terms of your position with regard to the Bible? Do you believe that everything in the Bible is true?
And good. Yes.
Okay, so would you believe, for example, that it is right to stone a man to death for gathering sticks on the Sabbath, or to stone a woman to death for not being a virgin on her wedding night?
No.
You don't think that that's right?
Yes.
Okay, now, what criteria are you using to determine that? Let's take another thing, first of all. I presume you accept that love thy neighbour as yourself is good.
Yep.
Okay, so both of those are in the same book. What criteria are you using to determine that love thy neighbour as thyself is a good thing that God said, and stone a man to death for gathering sticks on the Sabbath is a bad thing that God said?
Well, I would use three criteria. One is intelligence. The other is reading the Bible as it's written and the context. And the third is a concept of what's called progressive revelation. Because there are religious fundamentalists who pick and choose verses from the Bible, so our atheists very often pick and choose verses from the Bible and don't understand them in context. So the passage you're referring to about stoning on the Sabbath, the one person who we know that happened to, is in the context of the civil law of Israel. And the way that I would put it is simply this. So I'd go along with Richard Dawkins, actually, if as an atheist you want to accept that. He asks in The God Delusion, why do we have the right to judge people from another era with the zeitgeist of this era? I think these problems, these verses in the Bible are difficult for Christians because we have an absolute law. I don't see why they should be a difficulty
for you. First of all, it wasn't these people. If you believe in God, it was God that said this. They specifically asked God what to do. Should we stone this man to death for gathering sticks? And he specifically said yes. So this isn't people. So when did God change his morality then?
No, I don't think God has changed his morality. I think if you see...
Well, how did you decide that God's morality in that instance was wrong or subject to progressive revelation?
Well, actually, because Jesus revealed that himself.
Jesus said he had come to ensure that not a single jot or tittle of the Jewish law would be removed.
Indeed, he
also said he came to bring peace and not a sword. He said he came to bring family against family. He said he would kill the children of Jezebel for the sins of their mother. He drove moneylenders out of the temple, which is hardly a pacifist act. The idea of Jesus being some sort of a pacifist that changed what God said is
but
largely
I never
fictional.
But I never said that Jesus was a pacifist. And I think you've got a problem. Because what you keep trying to argue against is a very simplistic view of Christianity and religion. And I suspect, Michael, you have a wee tendency to kind of set things up so that you can mock them.
If you
really, really wanted to know what the answer to that question is, then one of the things that you would look at, and believe you me, as a Christian, I struggle with it. I mean, I find it difficult to see how you can struggle with it because it's from a zeitgeist of many eras ago. I think what you're trying to do is set up this straw man thing so that you're mocking God is changing. I never argued that Jesus was a pacifist. I think Jesus driving the money changers out of the temple, amen to that, and may he continue to do so. And I wish there were more people, more Christians, who would behave like Jesus in that respect. But what I do know in terms of the progressive revelations, you get things like Jesus saying, you have heard it said that, but I say unto you. So what you find within the Bible, and it's important, if you want a lesson in biblical interpretation, first of all, you find many passages that are descriptive, not prescriptive. So they're describing something that happened. Secondly, you're finding that there is a progressive revelation moving on. So that in the context of that time, the man was stoned not for collecting sticks on a Sunday. And if you go out and, I don't know, collect peat in Ireland.
We could give other examples. What I'm actually getting at this, and which is why I asked you how you determined it at the start, is not the specific acts. What I'm coming around to suggesting is that however you reconcile those parts of the Bible that you have to do something with in order to find them good, and those parts which you can automatically say, yes, that's good, love thy neighbour as yourself, that's automatically good. It shows that you, or whoever else thinks they're getting progressive revelation, that you are applying your own morality to the book. You're not getting your morality from the book, because if you were getting your morality from the book, you would automatically go, yes, that is right, we should stone this person to death because God said so. So however you reconcile it, whether it's that was for one pair of people at one time, or whether it's an interpretation, or whether it's a metaphor, You are applying natural human morality to what you're reading. You're not getting your morality from the book.
No. Again, two mistakes. You see, this is where it's very helpful for us to dialogue, because if you keep arguing against the position that Christians don't hold, you're just going to keep appealing to atheists and not directing to Christians. Christians do not believe that you get your morality from the Bible. The Bible is not a book of morals that is given to us. Christians believe that all human beings are moral because they're made in the image of God. Let me finish. Well, there are Christians who are stupid, so let's leave aside that just now.
And there are also
Christians who don't understand the Bible, and there are Christians who don't read the Bible, and there are Christians who believe what some dumb preachers tell them. That I'm not defending that.
So Christians who get their morality from the Bible are stupid.
No, I didn't say that.
No, you did.
No,
say
no,
that.
No,
actually.
No, no. You see, this is the little
several
no,
video
no.
cameras.
Oh no, 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 no. This is the little trick that atheists play, and you have to be honest. I didn't say that Christians who get their morality from the Bible are stupid. I said that Christians who think that morality comes from the Bible are stupid.
No, I said some Christians do get their morality from the Bible, and you said, yes, some Christians are stupid.
No.
That's the clear inference from that.
No, you said...
several video cameras.
No. Because, Michael, listen...
Okay, we'll clarify then. So then you don't think they're stupid to get their morality from the Bible?
No, no.
You think they're
again,
right to get their morality from
no,
the Bible?
No, again...
Oh, it's both
you,
of them.
If
okay.
you want, if you want
not
to argue...
stupid and they are stupid.
If you want to argue with what I think, instead of playing to the audience by trying to make it appear stupid, listen to what I'm saying, then argue against it, okay?
Okay, go
So
ahead.
Let me finish it. Here is the Christian position. We believe that all human beings are moral because they are made in the image of God. That the innate morality that we have, every human being has, that's why non-Christians can be judged by God as well as Christians. However, we believe that our consciences and our morality, if you like, has been seared, and that we need, because we've fallen in sin and so on. My problem
is...
Let me finish. I'll give you our position.
We've only got a few minutes.
No, no, exactly. Well, but if you keep interrupting me, it gets even longer. Yeah. So, if we believe that human beings do need God's law, not to tell us this is how you should live, but to make us aware of the fact that we're not the way that we should be. Now, my problem with what you're saying is this. You seem to have this enormous faith that there's an innate human morality that everybody knows. And I would argue... there is actually an innate human morality that comes from being made in the image of God, but that God reveals his law to us to show us how much we break that. And I don't think your simplistic view of the Bible is actually worthy of you. It's easy to mock a straw man. Don't set up a straw man. Argue against what we really believe. And we do believe that all human beings are fallen. I know that's mockery to you, that all human beings are sinful, but that the Bible comes and shows us not just that we are sinful, doesn't just, it's like a mirror showing us what's wrong with us, but it also shows us the way to be put right.
Well, you've forgive me here if I'm misinterpreting you, I'm sure you can clarify. You said both that we are sinful and we are innately moral.
Yes.
How does that work?
Well, if you weren't moral, you couldn't be sinful. I grew up on a farm, and, you know, I'm telling you this right now. I remember when a mother pig eating her baby pigs. If a mother human being killed her babies and ate them, she's going to jail, because we hold that as a moral action. But when a pig does it, you don't say, right, let's hold a trial for this pig. So you cannot be sinful without morality.
Yeah. Okay, can we move on to another topic? What's your position on gay marriage?
My position on gay marriage doesn't exist.
What doesn't exist?
What? Gay marriage doesn't exist.
Okay, what's your position on marriage equality?
For who?
For everybody, for heterosexual and homosexual couples.
Marriage equality for everyone.
Yeah.
So do you think that...
No, for marriage equality without discrimination on the grounds of sexuality in terms of being heterosexual or gay.
Okay, that's a very different question, because when you're saying marriage equality, I'm thinking of
friends
who would argue that they are naturally polygamous and therefore shouldn't they be allowed to marry as many people as they want.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I think you'll understand what I'm saying, because it's
oh, I understand what you're saying, because...
Okay, well then, how about answering it?
No, I understand what you're saying, because it's the way that people play with words, because initially in Scotland, for example, when we were having a referendum or opinion polls, because we're governed by opinion polls now, on... same-sex marriage, when people were asked about same-sex marriage, the majority of people said no, but when they started calling it equal marriage, well, equality is a good thing, we've got to go for it. I don't accept the term. I wrote to David Cameron, which wasn't a very smart thing, because I didn't get a very smart answer back, saying, can you please explain your stance on same-sex marriage? And his response was a very unintelligent one. Two people who love one another should be able to marry each other. But he also, in that letter, it came from him, said, we need to redefine marriage for everyone. If you understand marriage as it has been traditionally understood in Western European liberal society for the past 1,500 years, possibly even longer, then same-sex marriage doesn't exist without redefining marriage for everybody. And I don't agree with redefining marriage for everybody.
Well, first of all, I mean, that isn't how... I mean, marriage has evolved over the centuries in many ways. It was originally just alliances between families. It wasn't individuals who loved each other. It was alliances between families. So it's constantly being redefined. But again, I just to cut to the chase, are you saying that you don't believe that gay couples should be allowed to marry?
I think it's impossible, yes.
Well, it is possible, but I mean, because happens.
It's impossible without redefining marriage.
Yeah, you see, this is the difficulty that I have with religious...
60 seconds.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I'll take it then that what you're saying is that you don't think they should be legally allowed. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it's impossible. I think it's like the government legislation. It's like you asking me, do you think that there can be square circles because the government have made a law that there are square circles? No, I don't.
Yeah, you see, now this goes back to the original point, which is that one of the difficulties of operating on the basis of faith is that you're making comments that are completely out of line with reality. If we're going to have a discussion where you just don't accept that gay marriage exists, I mean, there's nowhere we can go with it.
I agree. Yeah, we can't go in it because the presuppositions are completely different. The only difference is I would say that your position is the unreal one. But.
Well, they're getting on. Here aren't they? I mean, this is terrific. Well, thank you very much for driving the first half. Over to you, David. You've got 10 minutes to interrogate Michael.
Okay. Michael, can you name one state based on atheism which you'd like to live in?
Well, there aren't. I don't want to live in a state based on atheism. I would be as opposed to a state promoting atheism as I would to a state promoting religion. I want to live in a secular state where the state recognises equally the right of people to hold religious or non-religious beliefs and doesn't discriminate in favour of either.
Good, thank you. Do you accept... I appreciate that there are many people who like that unreal fantasy, but let me ask: Do you accept that every state has to be based upon an ethos or a basis for morality?
Yeah.
Which one should it be?
It should be compassion, empathy, cooperation, reciprocity, fairness, justice, equality, lack of discrimination.
And who defines those words?
We do.
And who's we?
Well, the
human beings.
Morality evolves. Morality is not something that is sent down to us. Not only humans, but also non-human animals have these attributes. Because one of the things that you said earlier that is wrong is you said that Darwinianism is about the strong thriving over the weak. That's not what Darwinian means. The word fit those fittest for survival, it means those that fit best into the environment. And with regards to a lot of species, including humans, you fit best into the environment by cooperating with each other in the way, to use an obvious example, species or those members of the species who had the attribute of looking after their offspring in a loving way were more likely to survive and reproduce than those that didn't. So we evolve into a case where one of our underpinnings of morality is love of parents for children. But it's nothing to do with the strong overcoming the weak. I mean, that's part of it. But it's also cooperation, empathy, okay. Reciprocity.
Whoa. First of all, that wasn't the question I was asking. Secondly, you came out with two statements there. It's nothing to do with the strong overlooking the weak.
Yeah, okay.
That's part of it. Those are two contradictory statements.
They aren't, yes. It's not solely to do with the competition.
Not solely.
Competition and cooperation are both important to survive.
Good. I'm not disagreeing with that, and that wasn't
Excellent.
Where we were going.
Okay.
What you've done is you put back the answer because you've used words that people go, oh, yes, equality, justice, compassion.
Mm.
And I've asked who defines that, and you said human beings.
Yes.
Which human beings? Because what if human beings disagree about what those mean?
Well, what happens is either, as in the Crusades and Inquisitions or parts of Islam today, they kill each other because they disagree with each other.
Mm-hmm.
Or alternatively, we try to refine our sense of how we deal with these things in by discussion and by democracy. And there are two things that are equally important to the outcomes. There was something I was going to mention earlier, which I think is relevant to just mention briefly here.
Briefly.
That there are a lot of studies that show that atheists and secularists are less prejudiced, less anti-Semitic, less racist, less dogmatic, less ethnocentric, less closed-minded, less authoritarian than our religious people. There are studies that show that during the Holocaust, that the more secular a person was, the more likely they were to help the Jews escape from the Nazis. There are studies that show that atheists are less likely to commit murders, less likely to be represented in jails. There are a range of studies that show that in terms of morality and in terms of the outcomes that you would like to see from morality, including also things like teenage pregnancies, abortions, etc., that secular states have far better outcomes than religious states. And if you take the United States of America, the secular states within that have far better outcomes than the Bible Belt states.
That's interesting because, again, you place great faith in studies. I would show you lots of studies the other way. For example, I mean, you broke Godwin's law because you mentioned the Holocaust. So let me point out that a survey was done of Luftwaffe pilots who were captured in England, and when they were asked what their religion was, 40% of them said that they were atheist, 40% of them said Hitler, and 20% said either Catholic or Protestant. Studies can prove anything, and people on the internet are very self-selective about studies. Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm a realist. I don't live in this fantasy world where I pluck out Wikipedia or anything else, just the things that suit me. I like to deal with actual facts. And it's interesting because, let me tell you a wee story about how, I remember I wrote an article for Kaleidoscope, which is a gay online magazine in Scotland, and I wrote an article stating what my position was, and there was a bit of an argument and discussion and so on. And one man actually wrote me and said, David, I actually appreciate your position, and I wouldn't mind living in a country which was based on Christian principles and the way that you elaborate, even though I'm a gay man and so on, and I disagree with what you're fundamentally saying. But he also said this. He said, I think we're really talking about how we'd all like to live in countries like, and he listed off 10 countries, Norway, Denmark, the United Kingdom, the United States, the Netherlands, and so on. You know what the interesting thing was? And I wrote back to him and I said this, all of these countries are countries which arose out of Protestantism and all had established Christian faith. Now, what I find interesting is, you have said that you can't name one atheist state or state based upon atheist principles.
No, I didn't. No, you state based on atheist principles would I like to live in? I said I don't want to live in an atheist state. I can certainly name atheist states that are intolerable and that infringe on human rights in the same way as religious states do. I am as opposed to states that are based on atheism as I am to states that are based on religion.
Could you tell me of any state that exists at the moment that is not based on atheism or religion that you'd like to live in?
Well, the states that you've identified are pretty close to, which are the Scandinavian states, some parts of the United States. But they are secular states, they're not atheist states.
Yes.
They're neutral between... And I accept, by the way, your point that they initially came through Protestant societies, and that they don't tend, that you don't tend to get secular states evolving from Catholic societies.
I do
accept that. But what I think you should look at in the wider context is there's a site called the World Values Survey, which is put together by a team of interdisciplinary social scientists around the world, which is as far as you will get from choosing Wikipedia as a source. And what they are finding in terms of their examination of human values around the world is that as individual people move from survival values towards self-expression values, that triggers societies to move away from traditional religious values and towards secular rational values. And the triggers for it are things like investment in health, education, communications technology, and democracy. And so when you have those things in place...
You're not getting to your speech again. No, okay. That's the old...
I thought that was the point.
That's the old urbanisation leads to secularisation theory, and it's been debunked numerous times. So we could argue these figures back and forward, but I want to come to another question.
Give me something that debunks it.
What's it?
Give me something that debunks it.
Well, for a start, the United States of America.
How does that debunk it? You just mentioned the country. How does that debunk it?
Well, it debunks the idea that the more industrialized, the more advanced you become. I'm assuming you accept it's an advanced society. It's also a very religious society.
Yeah, no, it's not. No, it is a religious society in the parts that aren't urbanized. The Bible Belt parts of America are the ones that are like the countries that haven't been urbanized. And when you get to the parts of America that are urbanized, they are more secular.
I see the old prejudice about prejudice.
The old facts, yeah.
Because I've been to the southern.
Give me another country.
I've been to the southern U.S. No. I'm sorry. I'm not going to let people away with that kind of illiterate racism because I've been to the southern. Let me finish.
Okay.
I have been to the southern United States. Okay. And it is incredibly urbanized. It is around 90% urbanized. So you don't get away with those kinds of comments. Now, let me... I've come across this racism.
What races did I mention?
You mentioned the southern... It's like me saying about the southern Irish, that they're a bunch of illiterate people.
No, you had no idea what a race is.
What's that?
You've no idea what a race is, clearly. Anyway, go on.
Whichever you want to call it, xenophobia or whatever. I mean, I used to have that attitude about the southern US until I went there as well. And it's always a good idea, if you're going to speak about people in general, to make sure that you go and you talk to them. Because I do think that kind of comment is not helpful at all, to take a whole group of people and to lump them together in one law. I don't think we should ever do that. I want to come back, though, to another issue, because...
No, you started that by lumping a whole country together. I tried to divide it out with some nuance.
No.
And then you tell me that I'm lumping things
Michael,
together.
Michael, what I did was I pointed... pointed in terms of states that you haven't been able to cite one state based on atheist principles which you'd be willing to live in. But because you don't want to, you're not able to do that.
I don't want to live in an atheist state.
The states that you have named are all ones that come from a strongly Protestant tradition.
And are now secular.
I accept that. But here in a secular state, secular doesn't mean non-religious. Secular means separation of church and state. I'm not disputing that. You had said about making laws. I just want to ask simply, on what basis are laws made? By the majority vote?
Well, it's a combination of it was majoritarian democracy up to recently, and now we are gradually evolving to a more nuanced version of human rights-based democracy, where the test of a democracy is how it treats its minorities rather than its majorities.
Well, that's fascinating, because you're saying that we're moving from laws being based on democracy to laws being based on human rights.
No, based on majoritarian democracy. I think in Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland, we know enough to know that religious majoritarian rule is not a good way to run society.
Oh, I know, but I'm just wondering about secular majoritarian rule as well.
Okay.
My last question... you're going to let it go.
...negative section. So, over to you. We're going to get some microphones. We're moving some microphones around the room. We've got two, one for either side of the room. Incidentally, this is not a scientifically selected audience, but we gave out 150 tickets or so, didn't we, to local churches, 150 tickets out to humanist and atheist groups, and 150 tickets to... Who took them? I don't know. But you're welcome as well, whoever you are. So we've got two microphones. First gentleman here had his hand up. I'll go first. I am going to try and do that. So anybody over here, particularly if you're a woman... I'm going to go to you next because I like to be gender balanced. Go ahead.
Okay. David, a couple of strands to this question. You believe that Leviticus is the word of God. Okay. Now, whenever you talked about stoning, you referred to the civil code, basically the civil law of Israel. But wouldn't you agree that Leviticus is the legal code in the Old Testament?
I would agree that Leviticus is part of the legal code. It's split into three parts. It's split into the ceremonial, the civil, and the moral.
Okay, Leviticus 22:21, that allows you to stone people for promiscuity. Mm-hmm. 20:10, that allows you to stone people for adultery. Mm-hmm. 20:13, you can stone homosexuals. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of being the word of God, you'd suggested that with the civil law of Israel, but Leviticus is the word of God. Isn't it a bit cart before horse to suggest that they're just stoning people because of the civil law?
No, I don't think so. I'm sorry. You see, the interesting thing about that is, as I say, for a Christian, for me, that is a problem. But for somebody who accepts either majoritarian democracy or it's the culture of the time or the principles of the time, then you've got no reason to criticize it. I actually think that what's happening there was that God, if you like, I mean, I think what most atheists do is they tend to say, why didn't God intervene and make all human beings immediately nice?
No, but most but, atheists
say
God didn't exist.
What most atheists say is not why didn't God do this or other. What most atheists say is God doesn't exist.
Yes. Yeah. And I agree that is perfectly correct, and therefore it becomes pointless talking about whether God did or didn't say that.
David, there seems to be an argument that's recurring here that if you don't have a holy text, you don't have a morality. I seem to be getting that argument from you. Is that what you're arguing?
No, you're not getting it from me. I said precisely the opposite. What I said was all human beings are moral, which is why whether people believe in God or not, when you stand before him on the day of judgment, you'll be judged according to what you know and judged according to the morality you have within you. So I am not saying that human beings are moral because they read a religious text. I'm saying they're moral because they're made in the image of God.
So you accept, because you did quote Dostoevsky earlier saying, yes. You know, if there is no God, everything is permissible, which does seem to suggest there's no moral filter.
Do you
accept that atheists like Michael or humanists like Michael can have moral principles, can have rational moral systems, and can make moral choices in the world which they can justify?
Yes, because thankfully they're illogical. I did not say, they don't live consistent with their creed. I did not say, by the way, Dostoevsky doesn't say when there is no Bible, you can do what you like. He says when there's no belief in God, you can do what you like.
Over here? Let me go to another question. Yep.
Well, now, you said that man is made in the image of God.
Yes.
Now, do you also accept that man has evolved over millions of years from other animals?
Not over millions of years, but yes, that's a possibility that man has evolved from other animals, yes.
Well, at what point then was he made in the image of God?
It says in the Bible that God breathed his spirit into him, because I do believe there is a fundamental difference between human beings and other animals.
Well, at what point was it in Homo sapiens, or was it Homo erectus, or was it other forms of human beings which existed before Homo sapiens?
The interesting thing is, I don't have the omniscient knowledge that many of my atheist friends have. So the answer to that is, I don't know. I don't know. And there was a jibe thrown there about not studying science. Actually, that's also not true. And in my congregation just now, there are many, many scientists and postdoc scientists, and they argue about there are some things in science that are virtually absolutely certain, nothing, because a true scientist would say nothing is absolutely certain. Even Richard Dawkins says that in 200 years' time we could find out the theory of evolution was false.
Okay, just let me add one more point, okay?
All yeah. right? Sure.
One last one. You were saying that American society is based on Protestant principles. Well, the Declaration of Independence is based on principles of the French Revolution, and I don't think too many of them were Protestants.
Actually, can I answer that? It does really help if you know your history. The Declaration of Independence was largely written by a Scottish Presbyterian minister, and I kind of hope that he was a Christian.
I'm Brian McClinton of the Humanist Association of Northern Ireland. I think it might have been a good idea in principle to invite two people not from here to speak, but unfortunately, what I found missing is any real reference to Northern Ireland. I'd like to give David a quote from Lecky in the 19th century. He said, the Irish historian, if the characteristic mark of a healthy Christianity is to unite people by a bond of fraternity and love, then there is no country where Christianity has more completely failed than Ireland. And I would suggest if we apply that to Northern Ireland, David, there are at least four ways in which Christianity has failed here. It has failed in it, uh, it has not created or has prevented the development of a liberal, tolerant, inclusive, united, and we could add a fifth one, peaceful society. And if you take liberal and tolerant, I would suggest to you, if you look at many of the measures that are the hallmark of a liberal and tolerant society, you'll think of things like, as Michael mentioned, same-sex marriage, abortion, assisted dying, integrated education, expansion of the RE syllabus, so that it's not just purely about religion, legalizing humanist settlements. All those things do not exist here, and the main reason they do not exist here is because of the opposition of organized Christianity. And if you look at our troubles, you will see again...
I do think questions should be questions and not speeches, but when you began your question, I was...
I did say you could make a contribution from the
yeah,
floor.
But it's a...
So
a
let's be polite.
I am being polite. Yeah. I'm being polite. That is the first... That was the first of 4 points. Yeah, no, hang
it's
on.
All right. It's
hang
all
on.
Right. David, just park that point.
Let me
allowed
answer.
Allowed to make a contribution.
Let me answer
you're
the question.
You're allowed to respond to the contribution.
And I'm responding to...
Go for it.
I'm responding to the contribution. I actually was going to agree with you if you'd stopped after the first half of what you'd said. Because I do think that Christianity has failed in Northern Ireland. I agree with that. However, you then...
It's holding Northern Ireland back.
No, I don't. But I think I.
How does that work? Ireland, but it's not holding
well,
it back.
Can I answer his question? But let me tell you why I don't think it's holding Northern Ireland back.
Okay.
Because I think Christianity has failed in Northern Ireland because I actually think that those of us who are Christians have failed, and I think that we need more Christianity, not less. And one of the reasons that we need more Christianity and not less is the second part of Brian's comment, because it is to me appalling that anyone can suggest that a mark of a progressive society is that you want to kill the child in the womb. I don't find that progressive at all. And I would also say this, that I'm beginning to see what this liberal, tolerant society means. I find it astonishing that somebody who refuses to bake a cake with a message which they fundamentally disagree with ends up being prosecuted. That's what liberal tolerance means. It means you go along with what we say is right, and if you don't, then you will be prosecuted. I don't consider that to be either liberal or tolerant.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with that last part. Yeah. I agree with that last part. I don't think that people should be prosecuted for not baking a cake. I think the correct response to that is to go to another trader and to boycott that trader if you disagree with me. I completely reject your analysis of a pregnant woman's right to bodily autonomy and to health. And to avoiding the trauma of the aftermath of rape or incest, or to being forced to carry a fetus with a fatal abnormality in the way that you've described it. It is one of the marks of progress that women's rights are being recognised.
Okay. Let's go to the middle. This side of the room is very quiet. You've got to wake up, guys. Over there. Let's wait until the mic's in front of you. You got it now. There it is. Yeah.
Yeah, you said you wouldn't like to live in a religious society that sacrificed children. Well, if you look at the story of Noah's Ark, where God drowned everybody on the earth except one family, including all the young children, I think that that answers that. On the question too of Noah's Ark, I mean, God gave Noah 7 days to fill up the ark. In that time, he had to go to Australia to pick up a couple of kangaroos. He had got to go to North America to pick up a couple of polar bears. He had got to go to South America to pick up a couple of penguins. And he had to do this all. And then 250,000 species of beetles and all the food and whatnot. So he had to do that. So I'd like to know how he did it. The last thing on the Noah's Ark is the ark, according to the According to the Bible, the ark is 140 meters long by 23 meters wide by 40 meters high. And he had to get every animal, two of every animal in the world, into that ark. The size of that ark is given in cuboids in the Bible, but that's the actual size of it. Totally ridiculous.
Okay, let me answer that. You know, honestly, I think you need to go to an Answers in Genesis meeting because you and they would get on very well. I'm not here to be ridiculed by somebody who thinks that they're asking really intelligent points by suggesting that Noah, for example, he wasn't asked to build the ark in 7 days, by the way. You do need to get your facts right. And you do, You see, one of the things I find that's quite disturbing is the way that people who haven't studied the Bible come up with stuff that they just pick up and then have a go at this. I want to deal with more serious issues than talking about picking up kangaroos in Australia, if you don't mind. If that's an issue, if that's a real issue for you and it really bothers you and it's stopping you becoming a Christian and you're lying awake at night dreaming about penguins and kangaroos, then can I suggest that what you do is find yourself somebody who's interested, because I'm not. Now, I do have to answer something. I mean, it's okay. I like being mocked as much as anybody else. But I do think Noah's Ark happened. But by the way, let me finish by saying there was an argument made. You see, and this is where the tolerance and so on comes in. In terms of abortion, and I do feel this particularly strongly, the whole question of abortion is not just, we don't just rant at one another about this is a woman's rights and so on. I actually had to do a whole load of research on this, and I found that in Scotland, out of 21,429 abortions in 2012, 129 were for reasons that you described. It's the rest that I'm bothered about just now, and not only this, this whole question is entirely determined by whether there are two bodies involved instead of one. And I don't think that I should be ordered to accept that there's only one, when actually scientifically tells us that there are two bodies.
Do you support the right to abortion in those cases that you've outlined?
I actually think the abortion law here is wrong. I would personally support abortion if the life of the mother was in danger or the baby was not able to be born.
Rape or incest?
Well, because I have met people who are children, who become adults.
Okay, I'll take that as a no.
The answer is no.
Incest.
The answer is no, for the same reason.
So you think that a woman who has been raped or who is a victim of incest should be forced to continue a pregnancy that she doesn't want to continue with?
No, let me finish. If there are two bodies involved...
Do you think she should be forced to?
That's like... I'm sorry, Michael, you know those kinds of questions. You know that when did you stop beating your wife type question. The answer to that question, if people are want to be genuinely serious and think about these issues instead of just ranting and raving at one another, what I would want to say in answer to Michael's question...
Can we pause?
Yeah.
Just to pause. Is the microphone working? Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a Christian to be against abortion, right, Michael? Yeah. You can make a non-religious argument against abortion. You accept that?
That's right. The position of Atheist Ireland on that is, first of all, we support a woman's right to choose. But one of the main things in terms of abortion law in the Republic of Ireland is that it is controlled by an amendment that was put into our constitution explicitly to enshrine Catholic religious belief into the constitution.
That's your objection.
And that's when that amendment is removed, then the politicians... legislate for abortion
and then
on the
atheists
basis of whatever
ethics. And humanists might have different views on abortion.
Of course they
might. And they do have different views on abortion.
Yeah.
Okay.
So let's not get too bogged down on abortion, given that
the focus of the evening is Christianity within our society. Someone on this side. Now, you have had your hand up for a while. Can we make these questions quick and responses quick? I'll get through quite a few of them. You look like you could do with some exercise, Rob, so that's great.
Hi, can you hear me? Oh,
yes.
Okay, it's weird. I thought of so many questions for you, David, but everything you answer is contradictory. So I'm going to direct this to Michael instead. I'm an atheist, but I've known a lot of Christians who are very liberal in their beliefs. You know, they follow the zeitgeist. And, you know, there's a lot of Christians trying to end the troubles here. Yeah, I don't really believe that Christianity has held Northern Ireland back when you consider the troubles as a whole. You know, a lot of priests, a lot of ministers brought people from both communities together.
I've never suggested that religious people are bad people. I think religious people can be as good as atheists. We have a natural morality, And those religious people were following their natural morality of empathy and compassion and reciprocity and cooperation and fairness and justice. And and they managed to avoid the corruption of that morality that the Christian texts can bring into their morality.
Thank you.
Hi. Oops, there we go. My name's Megan. I'm from Texas. No, we're not a race. But don't worry, I'm not offended. Actually, right now I live in Scotland and I'm with the Scottish Secular Society. And I have a question specifically for the Northern Ireland perspective on all this, especially coming from Texas. I'm very curious. Fantastic. Do you both think a secular government and society would be beneficial for Northern Ireland? And that's where the government has no play in telling religions what they should do, and the religion has no control in the government.
Both agree that secularism, not atheism, not Christianity, but secularism, separation of church and state, would be a good thing for this society. You've already made the argument for that, Michael.
One nuance to what Tony said. I don't believe that the government shouldn't be able to tell churches what to do. I think churches should be subservient to the government in that they are an organisation within society that has to follow the law in the same way as anybody else does. Because one of the problems that we have, particularly with the Catholic Church, is they seem to think that Vatican canon law takes precedence over the law of the land, and that isn't the case.
So, for example, if churches want an employment law, churches have an exemption in employment law because they want to employ someone who is, whose beliefs are consistent with their own religious beliefs,
yeah.
Which means that they could...
I think they should have that exemption.
Isn't that reasonable?
They should have that exemption for roles that are essential to the carrying out of the religion. In other words, if they want to say, if a priest obviously has to be a Catholic, but it doesn't mean that the gardener of the church has to be a Catholic.
All right. Where are you on the secular question on separation of church and state?
Well, I am. I'm for it. Basically, I think that though the concept of a neutral secular government is impossible, I think that many people use secularism as a guise, basically, for their atheism, and I think that what Michael has said just now. In Northern Ireland, we do actually have a secular government. We don't have a church government. It's a secular government, and I'm glad that there is a secular government. However. In Northern Ireland, of course, it's a secular government. It's I'm sorry, but you in Northern Ireland, it is a secular government. The churches do not appoint the ministers of state or whatever. It is a secular government. Now, what Michael has said should send shivers down anyone's spine, and for me, it does, because what Michael has said is that we as a church should be told what to do by the state. And I will say it will be a cold day in hell before I let any government tell me how I should run my church and what should be done in the church, what we should believe, and how we should act upon it. This is the kind of secular totalitarianism. Every single state in the world says it has religious freedom, even Saudi Arabia.
Look, yeah. Nobody said any of those things. Nobody said any of those things. You've just invented that in the same way as you've invented your God.
Did you not just say that the church, the government should be able to tell the church what to do?
That the government should be able to tell everybody to obey the democratically agreed laws of the land, and the idea that you should have some sort of exemption that puts you above the law simply because you believe that the creator of the universe is telling you things is anti-democratic. But
I think we seem to be having a real problem with context and definitions tonight. So what we have is atheists are being put in one big massive group and all being essentially saying that atheists are all the same. We all have the same beliefs. Atheists have the same lack of one belief. That is what atheism is. I don't believe in God. So you can't attack atheists and say that they're all working in the same way together for the same things. Secularism is different. But when it comes to Christianity and the question tonight, is Christianity holding Northern Ireland back? We have to define Christianity because David has just suggested that Michael is attacking a straw man. But the problem with Christianity is, let's say there's 1 billion Christians in the world, there's 1 billion different versions of Christianity. Everybody has their own personal take on what Christianity is. cafeteria Christianity, what I call it. You pick and choose every day what you want. I'm not trying to patronize or say that, put, again, create another straw man. But if we're going to suggest what Christianity is in Northern Ireland, and is it holding Northern Ireland back today? Yes, it is. Northern Ireland has Christianity in the DUP, and the DUP are the most homophobic and bigoted group, and they're the strongest party in Northern Ireland. But they have too many of their decisions based on their religious beliefs. So therefore, it's not secular. They're allowing their religious beliefs to be brought into politics, and those politics then divide people and hold them back. So we have to, I haven't done it well, but we have to define what Christianity is. Which version, David, of Christianity are we attacking? Which one can we attack? Which one can't we attack? Because you can't just say it's a straw man when it's something you don't agree with. If it's something for God... Yeah.
Well, there are two things that make me quite curious in that question. The one is that, you know, the standard one, an atheist is just someone who doesn't believe in God. Atheists don't have the same beliefs. I kind of like that to be true. But every atheist group that I go to and speak to, they all come up with the same stuff. And I'm thinking, is this a remarkable coincidence that they just all happen to believe and say the same things, even though atheists, a definition of atheism is just someone who doesn't believe in God? So I'm curious about that. I'm also curious about the statement which was delivered with such authority that you have a billion different Christians and a billion different versions of Christianity. It's just empirically not true. It's just absolutely not true. So, for example, I'm sure there are a few Christians here, and I suspect that whilst we might disagree on secondary things, all of us agree on what the basics are. And I find myself in a position where, for example, when I read the previous Pope's books on Jesus of Nazareth, I'm going, yeah, you got the Mary stuff wrong, but the rest of it you've got right. And I regard someone like him, believe it or not, I would regard someone like him as a Christian brother, my Baptist brothers and sisters, people with different backgrounds. So I think it's a little bit rich and disingenuous and wrong to say that there are a billion different versions of Christianity.
Just to clarify what atheism is and what atheists have and don't have in common. Atheism is either not believing that there are gods or else believing that there are no gods. Now, there is a slight distinction that goes slightly beyond that. If you don't believe that there are gods, you don't believe that we get our morality from gods, and you don't believe that we get our sense of reality from gods. And those are two significant worldviews to have in a world where most people believe the opposite. It's quite easy to say, for example, there's something that some atheists will say is atheism is like not collecting stamps, and you don't have organisations for not collecting stamps. Now, that's true. But if you had a situation where the majority of people in the world believed that the post office created the universe and that you had to check your stamp collection before you passed laws, then you would have organisations dedicated to not collecting stamps.
Hi, I'm speaking as a member of the post-Good Friday generation, and we've been talking a lot of like evolution of Christian beliefs, and I think as a study of Northern Ireland, they've been less strongly held, you know, but they've made more concessions, as seen in gay marriage, which has been voted in, you know, but obviously it was blocked. And I think if you find the amount of young people here, we'd support things like gay marriage, and we'd be less inclined to vote in a government who would run it through Christian values. And I'd just like to say, Michael, are you confident that Christianity in Northern Ireland will become an irrelevance? And David, do you fear that?
Yes, I do think that is the direction that the world is going. Again, if you go back to the World Value Survey, the world is becoming more secular at different speeds in different places. And what is happening is that as secular morality overtakes the old morality of religions, and as science overtakes the reality claims of religions, that people have two options. Some people, and thankfully it's the majority in the Western world, are becoming more secular, and then others are retreating from those new claims by becoming more fundamentalist. So both of those things are happening at the same time, but the overall direction is in favour of secularism.
And David, do you feel that?
Well, for Northern Ireland, can I just come to Northern Ireland in just a second, just to say Michael there said something, which he keeps talking about reality. And then quoting things that are unreal, because in terms of religion declining in the world, actually in the past decade, More people, there's a higher percentage of people who are now profess themselves as religious. Northern Ireland and Western Europe and even America, they are not the world. There are more Christians in China now than there are in the whole of Europe. So, and I'm looking at Africa, I'm looking at the enormous growth of the church, and I know that Richard Dawkins, one of the reasons he wrote The God Delusion was because he was horrified at how many young people in Oxford University had become Christians. So, I don't know. The way that the trends are going at the moment, I believe that Northern Ireland is going to go the route that Scotland has gone even quicker. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think that people are living for a fantasy. They're saying, if only we get rid of religion, then we'll have this wonderful secular utopia. And I suggest you read someone like John Gray. John Gray's an atheist. His book, Black Mass, where he looks at how atheistic, secularist, enlightenment utopias have created so much harm. And yes, young people in Northern Ireland, because of the influence of the zeitgeist and the culture, I suspect they're going to reject much of Christianity, but I think that will be disastrous for Northern Ireland. And I pray it doesn't happen.
Hiya, my name is Boyd Slater. I'm the chair for Atheist Northern Ireland. And just at the very start of your talk, David, you said, where are the, you know, the atheist food banks. Well, just to let you all know, on Sunday we have a food drop at the Mac. So if you want to bring along any tinned goods, we're doing that. And the next bit is that you said that we get our morality from God because we're made in the image of God. And if that's the case, then do I get my morality from a God who wiped out the entire planet in Genesis, apart from six people? Or do I get my morality from a God who asked Abraham to kill his only son or his son? Do you think that's a good place for me to get my morality from, or what's the crack with that?
First of all, let me congratulate you for the first part of your comment or question. I'm glad to see that atheists have been provoked unto love and good works, and I'm delighted that you're copying. I'm delighted that you're copying the Christians. Keep it up. Maybe one day you'll also start some schools and so on. Yes, atheist education. Can I also say that I'm delighted that there are atheist churches starting up as well. And I'm sorry that there's been a split in the atheist church movement already, but never mind. Your second question, which wasn't really a question, it was more an accusation, the answer would be, if you find out about the God of the Bible and who he really is, and not the caricatured cartoon version that you seem to have fed yourself, then what you will find that he is a God of mercy and of love, and a God of justice, and a God who sent his Son for us, to die for us, even though we as a human race have utterly corrupted and are destroying his planet and destroying one another. Now, it's easy to set up a caricatured version of God and say, I don't believe in that. And I'm saying, if you're serious, and I mean serious about rejecting or accepting God, then find out. And it seems to me that the question you presented was a caricature, mocking question, which got the applause that you expected it to get, but it's not reality.
So respond to that then. Are these stories not in the Bible? Am I missing out in something? And then, I mean, you know, have I lost out in something there? And you said that God sent his only son for a human sacrifice. Is this something that we think is a good thing, to sacrifice humans? Come on. I mean, you've just said that's a good one.
I just want to point out that you accused us of caricaturing Christians in the same contribution as you suggested that atheists were doing good things because we're copying Christians.
Yes, that was my first remark. I apologise for it. It was a facetious joke, but obviously the atheist sense of irony is like the American one. And that was also a joke. And that was but Americans aren't a race, remember? Now, or at least that's what I was told before, but then you never know with that atheist morality. It keeps changing according to the zeitgeist. Now, Nona, but let me come back to this comment, because again, you see, you did it again. Because instead of asking a question in order to elicit information, you just made a mocking statement, is it not in the Bible? I'm saying to you that the story is in the Bible, but until you get context and who God is, then you are not going to be able to understand that. And of course, all day, people are going to throw in questions. What about this? What about that? What about that? And to be honest, I'm quite happy answering those questions, except when they're not questions, when they're accusations. I don't believe you are asking a question. I think you are just making an accusation. And I'm...
Next question.
Hello? Hi. Okay, my name's Diana, and I'm a member of the Donald Baptist Church. There's a lot of talk tonight about Christianity, and I think living in Northern Ireland, that term is really muddied. There's a difference between Christianity and religion. So I'd just like to ask both of you what your definition is of Christianity, so we know when we're talking about it what you actually think it means to be a Christian. Thank you.
Good question.
Start first, Michael, or do you want to start? Who's keen to start?
Well, he's the expert.
Oh, David, you're the expert. Okay. Thank you very much.
For me?
What is your definition of Christianity?
My definition of Christianity is just simply, a Christian for me is someone who follows Jesus Christ. And I think there's a huge amount of cultural Christianity, which, by the way, Northern Ireland suffers from, and which any society will suffer from. I think the biggest disaster that ever happened to the gospel is when Christianity became associated with political power. And I think that's a disaster. And for me, Christianity is about following Jesus Christ and telling the good news of Jesus Christ to people. And to me, that also includes believing his word, because I think we learn about Jesus from the Bible.
Yeah. The more you talk, the more you're going to add on to this. Because I assume that you mean, by following Jesus Christ, you believe he's God. You believe
the Bible.
You believe he rose from the dead.
Yeah, the Jesus of the Bible, Depeche Mode, your own personal Jesus.
So just to be clear, because you could be a non-subscribing Presbyterian who doesn't believe that Jesus was God, maybe, and follow Jesus.
No, you're not following Jesus.
Okay, so there we are. So they're not Christians. So what do you mean by Christian?
Someone who follows Jesus.
It's not enough.
And if you're asking me, who is Jesus?
Definition.
Well, I tell you what, I belong to an organization called Solas, and we accept as Christian anyone who can sign up to the Apostles' Creed and actually mean it.
Okay, that's a lot of stuff.
No, it's not. It's about 10 lines.
Trinity has got everything to life after death. Yeah.
You're not a Christian if you don't accept the Trinity.
Okay, so the Apostles' Creed is your definition. Michael, what's your understanding of Christian?
There was an opinion poll in Ireland during the Eucharistic Congress where Irish Roman Catholics were asked what they believed, and it turned out that 75% of them didn't believe in transubstantiation, which is one of the key distinctions between two types of Christianity that they're supposed to be on the other side of. 50% of them didn't believe in hell, 15% didn't believe that Jesus was the Son of God, and my personal favourite, 8% didn't believe in God, which I would have thought would have been a low hurdle for being a Catholic.
So I think it
is flexible. I think different Christians will have their own definition of Christianity. But the Christian institutional churches, as religions, I think there's a difference between people's personal beliefs about Christianity and institutional churches, which I think are about controlling people rather than about personal beliefs.
At all? Yeah. A little bit. Debbie?
Not really, no.
Okay. I feel your pain. Anybody else got a microphone in front of... Could you bring the microphone a little bit closer to the audience? That would be great. Over here. This gentleman here has been waiting with his hand in the air and is getting sick, I think, waiting. Go ahead.
Hello, David. You just had a bit of a cheap shot there at churches. And I think you've had a few splits of your own down in history. You know, you talked about the atheist church having a split. I think you've had a few schisms of your own. But I just want to ask you one question about the secularism of our country. And you're saying that we have a secular country.
Yeah.
Well, I just want to ask you this question. If the leaders of my country believe in talking snakes, and dead men can get up and walk, and a ghost can get a woman pregnant, that doesn't sound very secular to me. Do you not think I have the right to question their powers of reason and their ability to lead the country?
Wow. Okay. One, I'm amazed at the question. Two, I'm even more astonished that people clapped it, but never mind. Here's my problem. First of all, again, first part, yes, Presbyterians have occasionally sometimes had splits in churches. It has been known. Some have gone to Northern Ireland, gone to America, got themselves a degree, and just come back and started their own Presbyterian church as well. So, but you said we live in a secular country, which presumably, I do, and a secular country means that people are voted on by people, a democracy, because I'm still on the democracy thing. I really don't like this idea of not having a democracy. I think that people should, people are voted on because of that. What they believe or what they don't believe is not subject to your veto. You can vote for them or not. That's what it means to be in a democracy. You decide to mock them, not to understand where they're coming from, to caricature them in that way. But the premise of your question seems to be simply this. Unless you don't believe, you can't be elected. And I think that's appalling.
By the way, you could ask Michael a question.
This is for both of you.
Thank you.
I'm trying to get back to the core point of the debate, which I think you actually agree on. To be honest, it's very difficult to get through to your argument because your smugness would be a possible word for it. It's very difficult to get what you really mean. But I think taking it smugness,
Here, just be clear about that. Okay.
I think, basically, the problem with Christianity in Northern Ireland, we can agree, is when it's used as a basis to make laws, which I think you said you don't want to have either, that you think our morality doesn't come from the Bible, that our morality comes from something within us. Michael, you believe in a society where we as a people, and in whatever society is, agree what the laws should be. So whether that comes from our innate humanness or our God part inside of us, I think we can agree that Christianity as a legal, as a basis from the Bible, biblical morality, shouldn't be part of our society. But actually we should, as a society, individuals, make our laws, make our society, make our own conscience as a society. And I think that is something you both agree on. And I think that's really the problem. Christianity has held us back because it's been used as a biblical black and white text. This is what the law should say. Homosexuality is an abomination, therefore it should be against the law. Type society in the past, and that's where it's held our society back.
In terms of secularism and religious beliefs, is that if we are to have a society where everybody's views and beliefs are respected equally, and where everybody is treated equally before the law, and where laws are made based on the common good while respecting the individual human rights of individuals, then you may believe that you have a position on something because God tells you, but you have to bring into the public space an argument that is accessible to everybody. So you have to, whatever you may think that God is telling you, in order to convince other people within a democracy, you have to put forward arguments that are based on the world that we live in, because that's the world that we all share in our democracy.
Okay. I actually basically agree with that. For example, my arguments against same-sex marriage were, I never once in a debate on same-sex marriage said, I'm against,
you're
it.
Against it.
No, wait a minute. Yes. No, I never said I was against it.
You said it didn't exist.
No, I never said I was against it or whatever because the Bible said or this or that. I argued from what I would call common law / common sense. Because incidentally, 20 years ago, nobody was for same-sex marriage, and all of a sudden, suddenly it's a natural human thing and everyone knows it, which makes me very suspicious when that happens. But you did say something. You said two things. One, I've noticed this happens a lot with what I would call, not all atheists, and I'm not going to put Michael in this category because having spoken to him, I don't think he fits, and it's not fair to lump a whole group. But I have come across people who are what I would call fundamentalist atheists, who, whatever happens, whenever you contradict them or whenever you argue against them, they call you names. Now, I'm sorry if it comes across as smug, just disagreeing with atheism, but that's where I am. I can't do anything other. And the second thing I would say about your actual presupposition, I'm glad that Michael doesn't want to eradicate, because the motion, I think, is a bit unfair, because the motion does suggest removing Christianity from Northern Ireland. And I'm glad he doesn't want that, Northern Ireland, that Christianity is holding Northern Ireland back. But I didn't say that I wouldn't want the laws to be based upon Christian principles. I believe in a secularism that is a Christian secularism. And I actually think that although people, you see, but it's not atheist secularism either. Wait a minute. But it's, I find it very interesting that although you accuse me of being smug, my atheist brothers and sisters here, they laugh at the very even concept. And yet, if you do any serious research and look into it, and I am a historian, you will find that the only versions of secularism where you get the liberty, equality, and democracy have been coming from a Christian background. And I'm saying you throw that out, you're going to end up with a very, very different secularism, and that's where we're heading. And smugly, you sit there and smile and laugh and sneer as though it was obvious we're heading for utopia once we chuck out Christianity. I'm saying we're not. I'm saying we're heading for hell if we do that.
Just to sort out this smugness thing, because I don't think it's helpful, and I don't think you are being smug. But can I just clarify? I'm happy to say about anything that I say here, about the existence of gods, about secularism, about anything, that I may be mistaken. Are you happy to say the same?
Yes.
Okay, well, that's, I think that's a positive thing to a positive starting place that perhaps we might have started the discussion
well,
with.
No,
and it might have helped to avoid people perceiving things as
I assume
as being
that every...
Yes, that is the case, because you can be atheist and agnostic. Atheism is about what you believe. It's about, do you believe there's a God, do you not believe in a God? Agnosticism is claiming that you can know something. You can be a strongly atheist, and I strongly believe that there's no God, and therefore I am an atheist. I also don't claim to be able to know that there's no God, so I'm also an agnostic. They're not mutually exclusive.
And can I also say that I find Michael to be more honest than many people who call themselves secularists or humanists, when in reality, I mean, it's interesting, we don't have atheist Scotland. I'm wondering if we have atheist England. But atheist Ireland, that's a very interesting concept. And I find...
Atheism UK.
I find your position actually to be, actually quite honest. And the reason that when you say about not knowing, believe you me, as a Christian, because I realize my mind is limited, and because I realize the weakness of human nature, of course, there are many, many things that we don't know. And I have been wrong in things before. I did think Scotland were going to win the World Cup.
A very, very brief answer from both of you. Given that you both accepted that you think you could be wrong, how would you know if you're wrong?
Well, a good start, if there was a God that was all-powerful, all-good, all-knowing, would be maybe get rid of evil in the world, maybe tell everybody the same thing instead of telling different things to different people at different times. A couple of other things, but they'd be good starts.
So a perfect world where everybody believes the same thing would be an argument for God's existence for you?
No, what I said is if there was a God who was all-powerful, all-knowing, all-good, first of all, they would be able to create a world without unnecessary suffering. They would be able to create a world without tsunamis, without earthquakes, without mass murders and genocides. Shouldn't be too tricky to be able to do that. He's supposed to be able to do it in heaven. Why can't he do it on earth? And then the second thing is that if this God has created a universe of 100 billion galaxies, each of which contains 100 billion stars like our sun, all for the benefit of human beings on planet Earth, which seems a bit unlikely, you'd think the least that he'd be able to do is give the same message to each of us rather than telling this group to kill that group and that group to kill this group.
Let me rephrase the question. How in this world would you know that you're wrong?
Well, this world is the world in which, the real world in which we live. If there is a God that is outside of this world...
A believer. That's
okay.
Not the question. Okay. I know you're appealing to the problem of evil to explain to me why you're not a believer. That's not the question. How would you know you're wrong is the question. In this world, which isn't a perfect world, how would you know you're wrong?
Well, It's hard to tell because obviously you could be. Just,
in other words, you could be mistaken. Is your belief even in principle falsifiable?
Again, it depends on what people mean by a God. If the God is if you're talking about God as whatever it is that caused the universe to be, I'm quite open to saying I don't know what caused the universe to be. Science has yet to find out what happened before the Big Bang. Science has yet to find out what caused life to happen. We know how life evolved after it happened. We don't know how it started. Science has yet to find out the nature of consciousness. There are a lot of things like that that are still big questions that we don't understand. And it may be the case that we're not going to be capable of understanding. We may have to evolve into something else before we understand. And when we reach that stage...
I guess what I think, yeah. Michael, is you didn't give us the right answer to the first question. You don't think you could be wrong. Because no. your position cannot even in principle be falsifiable. And you can't imagine circumstances in which it could be. So the right answer to the question was, no, I couldn't be wrong.
No, I don't. You're right that I don't know how it could be falsifiable.
Yeah.
But if somebody can come up with an explanation as to how it could be falsifiable that I'm not aware of, then I can examine it on the basis
Same
of that.
Question to you.
Yeah, sure. We need to have another conversation about that second part because I think there are plenty of reasons why that could be. And by the way, let me say simply that God didn't create the billions of stars just for the sake of mankind. He created it for his own glory. They declare his glory, not ours. But how could I be? Yes. Is my position wrong? Yes, very simply. If you could bring me the bones of Jesus, my faith's done. Also, in the next world, if I die and it turns out it's all wrong, it will be completely wrong. And I'll give you one other one.
David, there are churches all over Europe who claim to have part of the body of Jesus in relics.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think there's something like 300 complete crosses of Jesus that are found all over the place. And if you want to go back to medieval...
Bones.
No, they're not the bones of Jesus.
Ah, right.
I said, bring me the bones of Jesus. So you can use the DNA
or
whatever.
Even when people in churches present you with what they think are bones, you say, they're not the bones.
I'm sorry.
So, same problem.
No.
Is your position?
No. That is very unfair. Because here's the problem. My wife, for example, works in mental health. When I go in and visit a psychiatric union and unit, and someone comes up and says, "Hi, I'm Moses, or I'm the devil, or I'm Jesus, or I'm Mary," I'm not going to say, "Oh, well, I have to accept it." When someone brings me the bones, I know they're not the bones of Jesus. If you could bring me the bones of Jesus, not what someone's... Well, let's say you could do DNA tests or you could have some way of...
Treating it.
And let me give you another one.
You know, but you have the bones of Jesus.
No.
You cannot possibly know when you have the bones of Jesus.
Well, actually, let's... you asked for an example.
So your position's non-falsifiable
No. No, you asked for an example. I'll give you another example. In the context of this debate... In the context of this debate, if you could show me any society ever, or if there was a society to come in my lifetime, in which human beings completely rejected God and yet lived nirvana, then I'd say, okay, I got it wrong. Because there are certain things that are taught that I believe to be axiomatic to the truth of the Bible, one of them being that all human beings are sinful and we're always going to screw up. And I don't believe that a secular nirvana or a religious nirvana will happen on this earth. And if that would happen, it would disprove my whole faith.
If I could show you a perfect world, that would prove
you
wrong.
If you could show me a basically perfect society,
right.
not a perfect world.
That's a pretty high bar for epistemology, isn't it?
Yes, it is a high
right,
bar.
Okay, yeah. All right. Okay, let's go to two more questions. We'll go from one side. Tim, you have a question. And then, gentleman over there. Yeah, oh, I'm so sorry. Oh, before we do that, I did promise you the next question. Yeah.
Waving away here. Am I
all
on
right.
Mic? Hi, I'm Chris. First off, you've mentioned straw men a couple of times, and then throughout the entire debate, you've been criticizing atheism when the discussion is on secularism, but you knocked that straw man out of the park. Like, well done. The second part, sort of the main issue, in Northern Ireland, our problem comes when our legislators govern based on disputed facts. Being sort of sensitive on that one. You believe something. You believe that the former Pope is wrong in what he said about Mary. You believe that churches across Europe who say they've got Jesus' bones are wrong. So, as someone said, there's a billion different versions of Christianity. Maybe not a billion, but your version is right and others are wrong. And our legislators believe the same. What I believe, and I think possibly a lot of secularists might like, is when you're governing, it's fine to have a faith. There's a famous phrase, and you've probably both heard it, which is, religion is like a penis. It's fine to have one, but if you shove it in people's throats, you're going to have a problem. I want my legislators to govern how best they see fit. I'd like them to justify that decision, preferably without reference to something that is intangible, mentioning Jesus, the Bible, metaphors, which we'll not get into that. If you can justify why you're changing the law in a health department, which in Northern Ireland is dreadful. My question is, do you think legislators who have faiths should be able to justify their decisions based upon non-faith reasons?
See, you know, it's okay. I'm a preacher. I'm used to waffling, so don't worry. You said we were talking about secularism, not atheism. No, we're not. We're talking about whether Christianity is holding back Northern Ireland. That's what we're talking about. And you said there was a very interesting thing because, for example, I mentioned Christian secularism and people just laughed because obviously secularism means something different for them.
And,
but, no, well, I don't think it is an oxymoron, but never mind, because I think secularism is purely about separation of church and state. The unfortunate thing about secularism, and there's many different versions of it, as there are different versions of Christianity.
It is a term that historians use.
Like Christian humanism is a term also used in the historical.
Yeah.
But there are different meanings.
No, there are Christians can support secularism, but there isn't Christian secularism.
But I think
anyway, I would, and I'm sorry.
He's referencing the
historical. I'm arguing for Christian secularism, but never mind.
Yeah,
I'm entitled to do that.
You
however,
are, yeah.
However, what you said there was what you said there was fascinating.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's
precisely the same reason.
No, it's not.
The term is the same
term. Can I? Sorry, I was asked if I'm using the term, I should define it. What's the difference between atheist secularism or Christian secularism or secular secularism or whatever? One of the answers is simply this. As a Christian secularist, I don't have faith, the faith that you seem to have in human reason and the ability to work everything out in the way that you do. Now, you just described something there which was fascinating because you said you want your legislators to be able to come up with facts and reasons and so on, and they'll do it in terms of information. I'm sorry, but I'm a historian and I studied politics as well, and that's fantasy land. That is absolute, total fantasy land. Politicians vote according to their electorate. They vote according to opinion polls. They haven't, and I'm not saying this to bring up the same-sex marriage thing again, but I found this. When I debated with politicians many, many times, almost none of them had thought through the actual issues. They were voting on the basis of faith, emotion, opinion polls, what they thought their constituents would or wouldn't want, what the press would do, and how much hate mail they got.
Two more final questions.
You can talk about what some people might call a Christian secularism, which is the secularism that evolved from the battles between Catholics and Protestants post-Reformation, and they eventually figured out that rather than continually killing each other, that it would be more appropriate to try and come up with something that enabled both Catholics and Protestants to coexist within a society. But that is different, I wouldn't call that Christian secularism. I would call it secularism that has evolved from Christian societies. We now have a different type of secularism, which is based on recognising the equality and inherent dignity of every individual, regardless of their religious or non-religious belief, and that is based on human rights principles, equality before the law, freedom from discrimination, freedom of conscience, religion and belief.
Thank you. Penultimate question. You want to make a statement?
Yeah.
Oh, well, let's let you make it. Phone over there, yeah. Okay, Tim, I know you're a vicar. Would you mind if this lady had your question? Yes, you can't really say no to that, can you? Yes. Go ahead.
Hello. I just want to say I'm a Christian and I have a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, and I think it is so important for Christians to present their ideas with grace. And I think some of the things you said, David, about atheists, about Americans, is not presenting your ideas with grace. I have friends here that are atheists, and I think if Jesus were here, he would want us to present our ideas with grace and not come across in any way arrogant. And that's all I want to say.
Do I have to stand up? hello. I suppose it's to both of you. It's kind of a, again, the gentleman with the hat over there, it's a kind of a different spin on what he was asking. Oh, sorry, Belfast barman, I didn't know you. So it's to you both, hello, of an idea of where you might go with this. Back to Northern Ireland. It's just that in a democratically elected society, where you're, you know, where the politicians are representing the views of the entirety of Northern Ireland, do you think that it's acceptable that those politicians can decline to vote on issues that are important to its voters? And that's to both of you.
Because just so it would probably be easier for you. If
yeah, same-sex marriage would be.
Oh, we're back to same-sex. We're back to same-sex.
But
marriage.
But that's just an example. I really am not focusing on that. I'm just saying I'm thinking of Northern Ireland politics now and in the future. And you're talking about the effect of Christianity on Northern Ireland society. You know, so I'm saying for I mean, you can't have a different rule just for same-sex marriage. You know, so the question's for any kind of vote like that. Do you think you should be able to abstain from voting? Now, I'm not saying you can't say yes or no. You should be able to abstain from voting in a democratically elected society, based on, I suppose, in this case, Christian beliefs or any beliefs, you know?
I think they're entitled to abstain, but I think that they should only abstain on genuine reasons if they don't know what the right thing to do is. But this kind of tactical backing out of voting, it's unfortunately based on the compromises that were necessary to move away from decades of terrorism, which ended up with a kind of strange version of democracy, which institutionalises sectarianism by forcing people to choose particular identities that may sound political but are actual identifiers for religion as well. And I think we need to move, however it happens, we need to move beyond what will hopefully be a transitionary phase of this strange democracy that Northern Ireland has at the moment. And and I'm confident that it is happening. I used to come up here when we were involved in campaigns against the IRA and the Loyalist paramilitaries years ago. Northern Ireland was a much more sectarian state. It really was in terms of just the people. Now, the politicians still haven't caught up, but the people, when I come up to Northern Ireland now, it's so different in terms of particularly young people and people who want to move away from that. So I'm actually quite confident that we will get there, but it will require more institutional change to get away from what I hope is a transitionary, you know, Belfast Agreement-style government and towards a more reasonable democracy.
David, do you want to say something on
that? Yeah. Basically, I agree with Michael completely on that. I don't understand how if you've been elected as a politician and you have views on something, that you don't vote according to that, no matter the stick or what politics of it or whatever. And in particular, if you feel that in those views you want to represent your constituents or you may feel it's a particular thing you want to represent a particular point of view, you should only abstain if you genuinely don't know. To abstain in order to avoid hassle or trouble or whatever is sheer cowardice, and I don't know who you're referring to, whatever. But for me, that I mean, I'm not.
What it is that they're using political mechanisms that were put in place for one reason, for a different reason, politically.
Maybe I'm too much of an idealist in this sense. But stuff political mechanisms. You should vote according to what you think is right, and you should have the guts to stand up for your convictions. And I, whatever the implication behind your question, and it seems to me that you don't think that, I agree with you then.
I think this is a little muddled, because I think what we're really talking about is the use of the petition of concern by the DUP. So let me just explain this for you, David.
Okay.
The Assembly.
You want me to criticise the DUP?
No,
okay.
I want you to understand the context.
Okay.
Which was that the Assembly had a vote,
yeah,
and by majority they voted in favour of same-sex marriage.
Yep.
But because of one of the mechanisms of our agreement, which allows a veto for a party with more than who can get more than 30 votes, yeah, the DUP blocked that vote and said that they did so because of their commitment to Christian understandings of marriage.
Yeah.
So they have blocked a majority vote of the Assembly on the basis of a Christian commitment. Is that legitimate in a democracy?
Well, first of all, where's the abstaining bit come in? I don't understand.
Well, I think that's probably what you were getting at. So park the abstaining bit. It's not an abstention, it's a veto.
Well, first of all, if that's the system as it was set up, then obviously they're entitled to do that. Secondly, if they're legally entitled to do it, then that's fine. They're not abstaining, they're standing up for what they believe in.
Yeah, but listen, everybody in a democracy has the right to abstain. That's not controversial at all. But for the purposes of tonight's debate, what is controversial is if you believe in democracy, how can you support the use of a veto for religious reasons which overwhelms the majority view of an assembly? That's the question.
I would vote against it before... But mind you, I think a lot of people who are voting for same-sex marriage are voting for their particular faith reasons as well. But I would vote against it because I regard it as being detrimental to the good of society and the whole of society. That's why I would vote against it. People may want to dispute that and so on. But I do get a bit fed up of the emotional bullying that goes on that says, if you're against same-sex marriage, you're automatically homophobic. I think that's very, very, very unfair. I've got very good reasons why I would vote against it, and I do think that we are going to reap the consequences of this, and I think the kind of mob rule that's gone on in this is really quite disturbing. That's anti-democratic as well. In a democratic society, people should be able to express their opinions without being called names and abused.
I'm just taken by how often same-sex marriages come up tonight.
Yeah.
From so many parts of the audience. Has this, Michael, in your judgment, has this issue become almost, as David said, a definitional commitment of a progressive person? You can't be progressive unless you're in favour of same-sex marriage.
I would think that, yeah. We've gone through this in the Republic of Ireland. The Republic of Ireland, astonishingly, if you imagine even 5 years ago the idea of this being the case, that the Republic of Ireland this year became the first country in the world to introduce same-sex marriage by popular vote as opposed to by the court or by Parliament. Now, that's made a huge difference in the Republic of Ireland. And one of the most significant things about it is almost by definition, most of the people that voted for it are religious. If you look at the figures in Ireland. So I think it's a very good example of mostly Christian people voting for essentially a secular understanding of civil marriage.
All right. Do you have a brief response on that?
Very briefly.
Yeah. I wish that we had had a democratic vote in Scotland on the same issue. And when we petitioned and asked for the Scottish Parliament to allow a referendum on same-sex marriage, it was very interesting that all of those who were for same-sex marriage didn't want it, and I wonder why.
We're just moving to our final couple of minutes. We're not going to have a vote, incidentally. I know some of you wanted a vote. Do you really want a vote? Because I wanted a bit of a vote. You know, because I thought if we have a vote, then whichever side wins, we could either go out to the sound of John Lennon's Imagine or Graham Kendrick's Shine, Jesus, Shine. And, you know, we could all bop out together. But we're not going to have... No vote. Because you're too intelligent an audience to need a vote. Your minds have... Anybody changed their mind yet in the course of the evening? And courageous enough to put your hand up. Has anybody changed their mind on this question? Christianity is holding Northern Ireland back. Anybody? Either way. Well, hasn't this been useful? Welcome to Northern Ireland, and it's great to have visitors from outside of the place coming in to provoke us to think new ways. And incidentally, our guests will be on Talkback tomorrow from 12 on BBC Radio Wall Street. If you haven't heard enough from them, they will be taking calls from everybody else in Northern Ireland, and nobody's going to change their mind there either, because that's how we do it. Anyway, final remarks, starting with you, David. You've got no more than 5 minutes, by which we mean three.
Well, it's interesting because I do think, you know, the question that was asked about what would make you change your mind, from a Christian perspective, we have the Holy Spirit, and I've seen many people who are atheists and fundamentalist atheists who've actually changed, and that's what I pray and hope would happen. I'm sorry about the graceless thing. That's a matter of perception. For me, when people abuse and mock Jesus Christ, who I love and who I serve, then I believe it's right to defend that. I think it's right to be robust in arguments. And I'm afraid one of the things that bothers me about Northern Ireland is you're becoming too much like the southeast of England, where people take offence far too quickly. And I'm sorry if that comes across as, you know, anything we say, anything that Michael says, you know, anyone can find and take offence at. And I find that really rather sad. As I say, this whole issue, I'm just, religion corrupts our sense of morality and religion corrupts our sense of reality. I think Michael's position is an extraordinarily faith position. I think it's based upon the view that human beings are basically good, that there are fundamental basic human rights which are there inherently. And what disturbed me greatly about what he said, and this really genuinely has disturbed me, that democracy should be subject to these basic human rights. Who determines what those basic human rights are? And that's one of the concerns that I have, where people are just suddenly making, this is a basic human right, and we're saying that it is. Now, oh, it evolves and it changes. Well, what else is going to change? I don't think same-sex marriage is mentioned because it's the shibboleth issue. But I think there are other things that are there as well. And I do think what I mentioned at the beginning, that we are going to lose a huge amount. When the secular faith bumps into reality, it's going to be quite difficult. I was amused that Michael thinks that communism is gone, or that the unregulated free market that we just sorted out. Really? Really? You see what's happening in our country? You think that that's going to happen? You think Islam is just going to go away? Is this the Jeremy Corbyn style? Let's just sit down and all be nice and everyone will see? Let me tell you this, that when this has been going on since the 19th century, when people who think that they are part of the Enlightenment don't get their way, sometimes they can become as intolerant as other human beings, because all of us as human beings are screwed up. Prayer does not work. Maybe I want to finish with this. 4 years ago, today, I was in hospital in a coma. My wife was told that I wouldn't live, and that if I did live, I would be severely brain damaged. Well, maybe I have been. Maybe that accounts for the smugness and the gracelessness and so on, and my inability to see the obvious light and reason of enlightenment, secularist atheism, or whatever it is. Maybe I have been brain damaged. Maybe religion is a virus. Maybe we need to eradicate religion, as Richard Dawkins argues. Maybe, as Richard Dawkins argues, as he told a bunch of Catholic intellectuals in Dublin, being brought up in the Catholic Church is worse than being sexually abused as a child. And that's what he said. And he was applauded for saying it. I am very concerned about where all this is going and this antagonism. Prayer does work. I was in a situation where I was not expected to live. My surgeon, who is not a Christian, he attributes my survival to the fact that some kind of miraculous intervention. And yet what will happen is, of course, those of you who are atheists automatically say, it can't happen, because you live within a closed worldview which doesn't allow for that to happen. I want to argue for a Christian worldview which actually causes more questions and concerns. And I want to say this. When I go home and I have to meet with a guy who's just had a liver transplant, or a woman who's dying of cancer, or a girl who's struggling with her sexuality, and I'm going to say to them, look, stuff it. It's just the way it is. Bad things happen. We are a blob of carbon, as Bertrand Russell says, floating from one meaningless existence to another. I don't want to live in a world like that. I want to live in a world, Michael mentioned this world. He said, God would do this and God would do this. Actually, God is doing this. God is remaking the world without destroying us as humans, without turning us into robots. And I think that's why he sent his son Jesus, so that people could be changed. I will tell you this. I am frightened at the fundamentalist intolerance that comes both from religions and from atheists and secularist people. I want us to have a more open and more tolerant society, and I want to be able to be free to proclaim who Jesus Christ is without automatically being told, well, you can't stand in Parliament, or you can't do this, or you can't say that. So I just simply, I apologize if I've upset anybody. That's the way that it happens. Michael usually does that fairly well. It's my turn tonight. I really do hope that we will be a bit more open-minded and that we will look. I ain't going to stop digging, but thank you very much.
Your commentary about how another caricaturized version of how atheists would deal with dying and with cancer.
Sorry, I didn't mention how atheists would deal with dying.
No, you referred to cancer.
Yes, I didn't mention atheists. Though.
Yes, you did mention atheists.
No, I mentioned how I would.
No. Then you went on to a caricatured version of how atheists deal in terms of saying, oh, there's nothing you can do, etc., etc. My wife died of cancer a few years ago. And the period between being diagnosed and the time that Anne died was actually one of the best year and a half of our life. Because we fully appreciate, and again, coming from an atheistic perspective where we're not depending on seeing each other again in an afterlife, that year and a half was so much more precious than the 25 years that we'd had together up to then. And one of the things about dealing with situations like that, depending on our own natural compassion and empathy, is that because you don't have to worry about what's going to happen afterwards, there is a peace that comes from that. And in fact, statistically, I don't even want to talk about statistics in this context, but I'll have to say statistically, atheists are the least stressed people about dying. Strongly religious people are the next least stressed, and the most stressed people about dying are moderately religious people. I do think that it is a test that I think religious people mistakenly think that atheists have difficulty dealing with. And that's not true. That's not true.
My experience is I accept that.
Okay.
It varies from person to person.
It does indeed, yeah. In terms of Northern Ireland generally, I'm optimistic. I mean, I think it's pretty clear that religion has been holding Northern Ireland back. We didn't notice it up to relatively recently. Because most of the population was more religious than it is now, and most of the religious population was less secular, in that you can be religious and secular if you support separation of church and state. I think the population has moved on, and to the extent that Christianity is holding Northern Ireland back, it's holding back what the people of Northern Ireland increasingly want, which is a society based on empathy, compassion, democracy, respect for individuals, not majoritarian rule, and a society where decisions are made based on a rationally investigating the currently best available evidence about whatever it is that you're deciding, and then coming to a democratic conclusion. Respecting everybody's right to believe in God, to not believe in God, to have whatever religious or non-religious beliefs that they want, but not to allow those beliefs to hold back progress towards democracy. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thanks to David Robertson, thanks to Michael Nugent, and thanks to you for coming tonight. I think some of this might end up on the Slugger O'Toole website or on YouTube or in other places, so you can look at it again. You can listen to a very focused Northern Ireland approach to these issues tomorrow on Talkback after 12. We'll be drilling into the Northern Ireland implications of this question. David will be around later at the back to sign copies of his book if you'd like to chat with him. I'm going to be at the bar with Michael. Oh, and he is paying. He is paying. Tim.
William, you've just been saying thank you very much to Michael and to David, but I think we also want to say thank you to William as well. So should we just express our appreciation to William?
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. and listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.